You like Fireboy? I do.
You're listening to Your Tables on Fire, a weekly conversation with the hottest game designers on Kickstarter. Here comes your host, Jeff Beck.
Thanks for tuning in to Your Tables on Fire. This is episode number 48.
All right. With me tonight, we have not one, but two special guests. We have Andrew Stangley of Force Perspective Entertainment and Jimmy Snitzline, the publisher and designer, respectively, of Claim, The Search for the Gold Nugget. Andrew and Jimmy, welcome to Your Tables on Fire.
Fantastic to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming on. Well, Andrew, you're a longtime friend of the show.
I'm a veteran.
Jimmy, that's right. You know what you're doing here. Yeah. Probably more than we do. Jimmy, this is your first time on, so why don't you take a minute and introduce yourself.
Absolutely. I'm from the Champaign area. I got my game designing basically from season two of Kudo Plays. I did claim... I did it basically halfway through their competition. They let me slide in, so it worked out really well. And I was very happy. I ended up finding an artist to finish off the art and really just settle in what the game was really trying to shoot for.
Great. Andrew, now, you were on last time with a game called Houdini's Poutini, if I'm not mistaken.
Indeed.
And... why don't you just take a minute there and remind, or you know, listeners who maybe missed that episode, we'll have to put a link in the show notes, but for anyone who missed it, tell us about that game.
Okay, yeah. So Houdini's Poutini is a sort of set collection game. The premise of it is that Houdini's having a party, and he's invited all of the world's greatest magicians there, but the only catch is that Houdini's a terrible cook. So before he serves the main course of the night, poutine, which, if you don't know, is a Canadian dish with French fries and gravy and cheese curds and whatnot on it. And so you can see how if someone doesn't prepare that properly, it would be quite bad for you. So before the poutine is served, you have to use your skills in magic and escapism to get out of the party without hurting Houdini's feelings.
Very good. I should say, Andrew, since the last time we spoke, I actually had some poutine.
Oh, yeah?
And I can personally attest to the fact that it can be not delicious. Oh.
I definitely see that being the case.
Well, so let's talk a little bit more about your guys' experience with gaming. Jimmy, let's start with you. What got you into gaming in the first place?
For me, gaming was more, I started with RPGs like Dungeons & Dragons. And when through high school, I also did Vampire the Masquerade. So I had that kind of background. As far as game design, I just kind of fell into it. I've always enjoyed really small style games. Love Letter being one of the big inspirations for Claim. I like games that are very fast paced. I don't like really long drawn out games. But I will sit down and play a game of Risk occasionally.
How about you, Andrew? What have you been playing recently?
I've been doing a lot of co-op games recently. So specifically a lot of co-op deck builders for the Kudo Plays design competition that we mentioned earlier, which a little bit of background on that. There's a local design organization in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, which is where we're from. And every year they host a competition for local game designers. And so the turn-in for that just happened. But for that ad, I was working on a deck builder. So I've been playing a lot of deck builders.
Any particular deck builders stand out for you? Besides your own, of course.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Marvel's the legendary Marvel games, although I did just play the Alien one again recently, and then also Venom Assault, which was a game that I got from Kickstarter not too long ago, but it's sort of an homage to G.I. Joe, and there's a little bit of Transformers and stuff.
That sounds actually really cool.
That's pretty good. So have you polished up a game, a co-op deck building game?
So the deck builder that I'm working on is a pro wrestling deck builder. So there's it's counter and co-op at the same time, depending on if you do tag team matches or triple threats or whatever you want to do.
That sounds pretty good.
And just to toss that out there, Andrew is actually wearing a Dr. Wu shirt right now. It's a little Ric Flair slash Doctor Who action. So really selling the wrestling.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice. You have to send us a photo so we can get that on the on the website. Well, Jimmy, you mentioned that you kind of stumbled into game design. How did that happen?
Well, the big thing for me was during the time period I made Claim, I just needed something else to focus my mind on. Just hard times going on at that time. So I talked to a friend of mine, and he made reference to just talking about different games. And he said, why don't you make a game where there's like either a hidden area or a secret area, something that hidden information. And I was like, all right, I like to accept the challenge. So I just took
and that. You'd never made a game before that.
No, that Claim was my first attempt at sitting down and trying to work within the mechanics that I've played from other games, but just kind of trying to build something different.
Right. Wow. Well, that's not bad. Your very first attempt, and it's already on Kickstarter. Can't complain about that.
So I take no credit. Andrew approached me, very warming. Again, the Kudo Plays competition. I know I'm going to keep plugging it here, but it really did open the opportunity for an outlet that I needed at the time, and it really helped put Claim together.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, tell us that story. How did you come across Claim, or Jimmy for that matter, and I guess what about it caught your eye?
Well, so, you know, we met sort of, I guess it wasn't really through the Kudo Plays competition, but there's another like local group of game designers that try to keep that competition spirit alive through the rest of the year and provide sort of a, you know, resource for people to discuss game design and all that. And so through that group, at a meeting we met, and you know, I played Clay and we brought it there. He had printed up a few copies, and so I got one of those from him. And you know, it was a quick, simple game. Anyone can play it. You can teach it to anyone. It fits in your pocket, and the artwork is really eye catching. So I saw it and I was like, that's a really good game. And then shortly thereafter, I started doing, you know, Houdini's Poutini, or I was getting into the Kickstarter on that, and I was trying to think of like other things that I could get done as to try to build a profile as a business, because I mentioned it last time I was on the show, but the game I was working on had a bunch of like dice and a board and a tons of cards and maybe miniatures, and I was like, well, I like what I have going with this game, but I don't think I could, like, I don't have the audience yet to do a print run of that, because it's going to cost way too much money. And so I figured, you know, stepping stones, what can I do in the meantime to help build an audience? And then I remembered that Claim existed, and so I, you know, sent him a message, and I was like, hey, what are your plans for this? And he didn't, you know, He didn't really seem to have a whole lot of plans for publishing it or doing anything down the line with it. And so I was like, well, let's sit down and talk about this.
That's cool. Well, we've talked about Claim a lot. Let's get right into the game. I guess Jimmy or Andrew, either one of you, who can give me the pitch on what this game's all about?
I'll leave it to the designer.
Okay. Well, I would say Claim in a nutshell is a 2-4 player, 20-30 minute game with bluffing and logic deduction throughout the course of the game. Overall, the thematics of it is that you and other prospectors, quote unquote, are basically in a gold rush era. Your objective is to hold on to the gold nugget, either in someone's hand, hidden stash, where I'll get to in just a minute, or in somewhere hidden in the deck. Now, each player will start with three cards, as well as a hidden stash card, which is extremely, in my opinion, very relevant, cool part of the game. It's the part that lets you bluff, as well as kind of manipulate what you will do with your turn. And I feel like when I've been playing with a lot of players, they haven't really utilized that resource yet. And it's very new to players, where you have this hidden secret area where you're not really exactly sure what to do with it just yet. But I think as you play the game, you kind of start to see other players doing it. And you're like, what are they doing? I want to do those things too. And like, then you start seeing these little tricks and you're like, oh, I'm kind of playing a little bit differently. But it's like, for me, the best part is at the very end of the game, when everyone's just trying to figure out where the gold nugget's at, that right there is the best place, when people's face is just like, I had no idea you were even holding on to it. And it's just the best.
Mm. Well, you mentioned these you know, these tricks or these more advanced plays you can do. Can you give us an example of what that might look like?
Sure, absolutely. So with general, most players, during your turn, you will, there's multiple cards, but you always do this: take one action, play one card out of your hand, or you have an option to discard. So I was explaining this to Andrew through a messenger a couple days ago. One of the plays that I would like to do, for instance, is there's a card called Prospector's Deed, which lets you exchange a card with someone else's hidden stash. So you could, during your turn, take a card from your hand, hide it under your secret stash, proceed to trade that card away, basically a card you just don't want to use at this point, or it's just kind of a worthless card, and of course part of the game, and then get another card and then swap it with a card in your hand while still doing that during your turn. It's something that a lot of players, again, still aren't super figured out just yet, but I think as you play more and see other players make moves like that, it will definitely start to come to light, and it will definitely change the dynamic of how the game plays with, as the players play it more consistently.
Yeah, and so the final objective of the game is to end with the gold nugget card in either your hand or your secret stash. And so we had a game night a couple days ago, and during the last round of the game, somebody stole the gold nugget card from somebody else whose turn was immediately following his. So the person whose turn was next knew that he stole the gold nugget card from him, so the guy put a card under a secret stash. The next player comes up, thinks that was the gold nugget card, does a card to swap secret stashes or steal from the secret stash or whatever. And it turns out it was a worthless card for him. It wasn't the gold nugget card. The gold nugget card was in his hand. And so he faked him out and won the game. And so that was sort of a dramatic end of the game fake out, but you can do that from like turn one if someone has dealt the gold nugget card from the beginning.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the things I like about this game is that the gold nugget can appear in someone's opening hand or still stay within a deck, even be the last card before the final turn even begins. So you're kind of like searching for it, but you're never really completely positive unless you have it where it's going to end up. And there's ways of manipulating it to put it on, like, for instance, there's a card called Looking for Prospects that lets you take a card from someone's hand and put it on the bottom of the deck. I did that in one of our games when we were playing with a group of people. I put the nugget on the bottom, knowing that that's where it was. But I had to follow when people put more cards on the bottom where it was in relation to where it was placed when I took it. So it created a really weird, like, numbers game dynamic. But it was really cool. Like, we played an 8-player game with only one nugget, and it really was a lot of fun. We had never tried that out, but it worked out surprisingly well.
Mm-hmm. That's always nice when things just happen to work out for the best.
Yeah, the game goes up to 4 players, but you can combine as many copies of it as you want together, and you know, just by multiplying the number of cards in the deck, it works for as many people as you want, basically. So if you tried 8 players with one deck, it would run out almost instantly. So that's no good. But if you combine the two, then you can play with 8 players. If you add another deck to that, you could play with 12. But at a certain point, you might as well just do 2 separate games.
Right. Well, it sounds like you have several unique mechanics there, you know, with the secret stash and whatnot. So where did the ideas for those come from?
Surprisingly, the secret stash mechanic actually came from a playtest I did of Claim. The original idea was there was a card specifically called a satchel where you would be able to play it and then take a card from your hand and hide a card underneath it. And I tried it out that way for a little while. And eventually someone said, why don't you just have a zone or a card in front of players that basically act as that card? Because it was so hard to balance this idea of, well, how many cards that you look in a satchel? Is it like a idea where it's hidden information, but do I make every card to be able to look at it or just certain ones? So design wise, it was very awkward. But opening up that design space by just allowing it being for every player and everyone have the opportunity really broke the game wide open.
Mm-hmm. Was that the one major change that's happened since the original design up to now, or have there been other changes as well?
I would say subtle changes as far as how the cards played out. One of the big ones was right before I put the game into the finals, I changed... For instance, there's a robber's card that lets you look at someone's hand and take a card and put it in your hand. There's a card called Fool's Gold, which lets you cancel the robber's card. And what I did was it stopped there initially. But I felt like it was very underwhelming because it's like, oh, okay, I stopped it. But there's no real punishment for the other player. They just don't get to see my hand or take anything. So instead, I added the additional thing of you get to take a card now from their hand. So it makes players have to think a little more twice before trying to just fire off cards that are, I would say, a little more powerful in the game, but have a slight drawback or a potential to.
Well, Andrew, as the publisher, have you had any influence on the game design, or was it pretty buttoned up once you got involved?
Well, in terms of the actual design, not really. You know, we've been going back and forth on the rule book and the wording of the rules and things like that. But in terms of actual mechanics, no, they were pretty much set already. I guess we maybe tweaked things a little bit for two-player versions. Mm-hmm. That wasn't as clearly defined when I approached him. So, but still, it's not like any major changes were made from when I jumped on. It being so complete was part of the reason why I was drawn to it in the first place.
I was about to say, right. the two-player mode, that was something that Andrew approached me about. I have had players play with a two-player option and just play one-on-one and it'd be okay. But I was saying that the problem with that is you feel very limited in the moves you can make because you know someone's eventually going to end up with a nugget. Andrew recommended adding a shadow third player who just has a hand and a hidden card. This creates a dynamic of you allowing other players to hide cards either in someone's hand or hidden card and then hiding it from other players and forcing them into a scenario of, are you going to target me or maybe the stuff that I did on the other player and then have you try to find the gold nugget? And when secretly it's either with me, it allows you more bluffing capability and more dynamic shift versus just a one-on-one kind of situation. And it was a great choice.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, this is a pretty light game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could almost fit into a party game, especially, you know, if you could play up to 12 players. As I recall, Houdini's Poutini was also fairly light. Is that kind of the niche you're aiming for?
Well, maybe, I don't know. It's sort of the niche we're in right now, but it's more from the standpoint of low production cost games. You know, because again, we're trying to build an audience, and so when you just have cards or, you know, a tiny box, it's easier to ship, easier to produce, and low cost of entry for people to jump on board. You know, I'm not coming out with a $60 game from an untested designer and publisher, and people go, well, do I think this will actually work? You know, I'm coming out with a $13 game and people are like, well, I could probably give that a shot. So, you know, like I said earlier, the other game that I was working on was significantly more ambitious in scope and cost and all of that stuff. And, you know, the deck builder that I mentioned has somewhere around like 400 cards once it'll be done. So, you know, that's going to be a much bigger thing. So down the line, I will be doing bigger, more...
robust.
Yeah, whatever word you wanted to use to describe it. But, you know, less casual and small games. But I still like doing those. Mm-hmm. And again, they're a little bit more manageable when you're starting out.
Sure. Sure. And like Jimmy was saying up at the top of the show, you know, there's a certain elegance to the smaller games like Love Letter. You know, there's just something nice about a game that's small and compact and you know it's going to be done in 10 minutes. And, you know, that's not a bad thing at all.
Right. Yeah. There's lots of games that I have that I like a lot, but I don't play that often. Because I know it'll take like two and a half hours. And it's like, right. Well, do we want to play a couple of games tonight or just the one? And usually the fairly shorter ones get picked first.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one of my big things when I play with people. I've watched the Game of Thrones, the really large scale game, and just watching it go for 3-4 hours. And I'm like, I don't want to invest that kind of time into a game where, especially if I'm losing, I'm a sore loser. I'm not gonna lie. I hate losing. And my wife loves to make fun of me when we're in Settlers of Catan and you're at the end stage. And it's just like, you know, you're not going to make it there. And you're just like, go. And she's just like, don't be a sore loser. I'm like, I'm not trying to be a sore loser, but I'm like, I know this game's over. We're at that point where it's just no coming back. I don't want to be a jerk, but just like, it's like, I got to go for another hour of this. And this is like, oh, this is not going to end well.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, if a game goes that long, it better be like co-op or something so that everyone is in the same ballpark. Yeah. And if you want to just quit, everyone can agree on it.
Right, yeah. No kidding. If it's going to be more than an hour of my life, it better be just pretty amazing. That's
exactly.
All.
Exactly.
Right.
So let's talk about Kickstarter. So yes. Claim, how are things going for you guys?
I'm going to refresh the page just in case there's any new backers. But yeah, we're a little over a week in as of when this is recorded. And we're at 73% right now. So
that's great.
Doing pretty good. We're a little bit behind where we were with Houdini's Poutini at this point in terms of, you know, dollars, but we're higher in terms of backers, which makes sense because that was a $15 game. We're giving more of a discount this time, so it's a $13 game, and I think our international shipping is a little bit more reasonable this time, so some of the, you know, If all the people who backed on this one paid the same amount that they did on Houdini's Poutini, we'd be past that point. But because we're given a better deal, we're a little bit further behind. But I think we'll make it.
I just feel fortunate to be in a scenario where this project was like a couple years old now, and to actually see it kind of blossoming into something and Andrew approached me about it. It just opened a new avenue because at the time I just felt like I made this game. I didn't know what to do with it. That was the one thing I think a lot of game designers run into is if you don't have that outlet, it's hard to want to make that next step and feel comfortable about like making a Kickstarter, like following all these things. But since Andrew had already done that with Houdini's Poutini, this felt like a natural be like, here, I hope you can do better than this than I did.
Right. So how have you guys handled all the effort that goes into the Kickstarter campaign? And is that all on your shoulders? Are you guys a team working on it together? How have you played that out?
Well, I've been doing most of the work. Me and Molly, my co-designer for Houdini's Poutini, we've been prepping the Kickstarter for a while. He did the hard work making the game. At this point, I just gotta be. I'm the one that says, "Hey, everyone, it's a good thing. Go and go and buy it." But so you know, yeah, it's been mostly me putting together the campaign. Me and Molly putting together the campaign and the video and stuff like that, which was you know fun for me because I got to animate some of the artwork that was given in the game, which I had never really done. Stuff like that before, so I was expanding my own skill sets.
That's fun. Well, you mentioned that you're giving a little bit more of a discount than you did with Houdini's Poutini. Is that just to try and draw more people in, or is there a particular strategy you have in place?
Well, yeah, it's partly to try to get more people in, but also just, I don't know, when we had the first one, we were charging $15 on Kickstarter, and now we're charging $15 not on Kickstarter. And while we didn't sell any of them to anybody until after all the Kickstarter backers got their copies, it still felt like, well, we should have given the people who made it possible a little bit more. So this time around, we're trying to give you a little bit of a discount off of what the eventual retail price will be. And also, we're combining... There's a combined tier that has a copy of Claim and a copy of Houdini's Poutini, which is also at a discount if you would have bought the game separately. So,
well, I noticed on the Kickstarter page, you have a little section about how the stretch goals are kind of already built into the game. That, you know, all the things that you would normally see in a stretch goal, like thicker cards and whatnot, you're already planning to do that. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was one of the things. So with Houdini's Poutini, we had basically one stretch goal for linen finish on the cards. And for basically going forward, if I can afford it, I decided, let's just do that from the beginning. Let's not plan on that being a stretch goal. Just do it because that's what feels nicer to me. And that's what I like on my cards. So other than that, I was like, well, I can't really think of anything else that we could do for a stretch goal. Like, everything that I want to do, we're already doing. I didn't want to make up a bunch of silly stretch goals that would increase my costs a lot and wouldn't really give anything to people. Right. But also, I didn't want to, you know, sometimes you have games that have stretch goals that are really cool sounding and they add like these new characters to the game and new mechanics and things like that. And then they don't make it. And then when I play the game after, you know, like they make their goal, but they don't make the stretch goal. And so then when I play the game, I'm like, well, I knew there was a thing that would have made this cooler. And so now I'm like, this is okay. I like this, but it's not as good as it would have been. And so I don't want anyone to have that reaction to the game. And so I figured it was a better selling point to just be upfront with people and be like, listen, this, we're going to do it as best as we can, instead of starting with a, you know, inferior product and then hoping we make it better if we get more people. It's just like, upfront, we're doing it as good as we can, or we're not doing it.
Well, as a veteran now of Kickstarter, what did you learn from Houdini's Poutini that you've been able to carry over to this campaign?
I think the main thing is don't do shirts. which wasn't like, it wasn't awful to do the shirts. And mostly it was friends and family who got the shirts, so it wasn't like a huge deal. But there were some people that I didn't know that we had to send shirts to. But the problem was we found a service that would print the shirts up at a pretty reasonable price. So we built that into the tier with it and the profit margins and whatnot. But by the time we actually got around to ordering the shirts, their prices had gone up dramatically. So, but because it wasn't like a locked in quote, suddenly we were eating a lot more of that cost, which was a little bit unfortunate. So that was like the main thing that I learned going in is, you know, don't make a stretch goal or any sort of reward tier that has a cost that you don't have locked in when you launch. Otherwise, you're going to, you know, start paying for a lot more stuff out of pocket than you had planned on doing.
Right. Well, Jimmy, how about you? Do you have any advice for someone who's, you know, maybe they're working on a game, maybe they're sitting on a game? What would you tell them?
Honestly, I've still been like working on a couple other games, and I'm struggling still to like go from design idea to put it out there. But one thing I did see was Kudo brought in a gentleman who had been working on a game for what it seemed like 3 or 4 years. And he told a really good advice idea. He said, before you start any game, dig 2 graves. The first grave is for your ideas, and sometimes you just need to bury them and move on. The other one was for your ego. There's going to be people that are going to tell you you're wrong, and you just don't want to hear it. It's like you think your game is the best game ever made, and you just don't want to hear anyone criticize your baby. So for me, it was just like, that's how I felt about Claim. It's like, I brought this in. I had a friend of mine from the shop I go to try, and he's like, this is awesome. It's like, you have something here. And that right there was the inspiration for me to want to continue, keep going. But then when I did the playtesting with like a larger groups, they were like, we're just kind of like figuring it out all the time. We know where it's at. It's kind of there, but it's not there yet. And I took that and worked with it. Instead of getting mad and frustrated and just tossing away as if it was nothing, I took their advice, looked at it, asked myself, what am I doing wrong, or where am I coming at it from the wrong way? And then again, like, sometimes nuggets will come out of these playtests. That's why you playtest over and over and over, especially with new people. You never know what someone's going to say that's going to like trigger something in your head that's going to say, there it is. You're moving on now. Now you're to the next part of making the game better.
Yeah, good advice. Good advice. Well, Andrew and Jimmy, it's time to do what we do best here at Your Tables on Fire.
Ooh.
Which is not interviewing people, because heaven knows we're terrible at that.
I don't know what this is, but I'm excited.
I have not briefed him on this segment.
Oh, this is new for you, Jimmy. Good.
This is new. I have fresh blood. Not listened to anything. I'm super excited, though, so... Go ahead.
So what we're going to do is play the game design challenge. Now, how this works, Jimmy, is we are going to pick a random game theme. I'm going to present that to the two of you. You two can discuss it, mold over, and then pitch back to me what that game would be.
Oh, God. This is going to be great.
You up for that?
Absolutely. Let's do this. I'm excited.
Awesome. Okay. So I'm going to find a theme. And that theme is going to be Space Pirates Walk the Plank.
So is Walk the Plank the name of the game, or is it just something that should be incorporated in?
You know, that's
it could be
that's
both.
That's the subtitle.
Okay.
Yeah, so let's see. Well, if you're walking the plank in space, I would... It's kind of like being airlocked, I guess.
I would say, actually, it's more of a diplomacy-style game, because you could be the said captain or the crew. You're deciding whether or not to pitch the captain a mutiny, or the captain can argue a strong point to keep certain members of the crew, and then it's hidden information as far as who decides which characters walk the plank off into space or go out of the airlock in this case.
Well, it could be a space plank that's, you know... at the closest possible distance you can get to a black hole before being sucked in. Ooh. So when someone walks the plank, they are into the black hole.
So it's like almost like in game design wise, you'd have spaces and you'd have a spinner almost, which are rolling dice where you could take away or add depending on which character you were or what cards would drawn randomly off the top of a deck, let's say. Or you could be like bluffing game where it's like, I'll take 2 cards moving up X amount of spots on the step towards the black hole. How many cards are you willing to take and then execute that and then require a person to take X plus 1 cards off the top of the deck, where it could range from like 1 to 3 steps. A plank could be like 6 steps long or some amount, set amount.
Or the plank could be infinitely long because it's being sucked into the black hole.
Now you never actually step off the plank. I see how it is. Okay.
Yeah, you never step off the plank. You just get to that point where suddenly you're just zoomed into it. You're just stretched into an infinitely long string of molecules being sucked into the black hole.
I would just love it almost if there's like two pirate ships staring next to planks and the captains just kind of walk closer on the planks to stare at each other. And it's just kind of a game of chicken where they try to get slowly closer and closer until one decides to like walk away and be like, no, okay, I'm done. They're too close. They're too close to the plank.
Yeah, a black hole game of chicken. There you go.
Wow. That is amazing. You two should do this more often.
I know. Honestly, I think we have really good chemistry. And I always like to talk to him because when we first met, we talked for quite a long time before we even really talked about like doing something with Claim. Mm-hmm. He was working on another game talking about bears and time warping.
Yeah, the game is nowhere near being ready. It's mostly a title at this point, but I also made Bear Meeples.
That was a selling point.
But it was called Bears Repeating, and it's about bears being stuck in a time loop. And that's about as far as I got. I tried a couple of prototypes, and none of them were really working for me the way I was hoping it would. So I was like, I'll shelve this for now. Deck builder. I'm doing a deck build.
Well, you know, every great game starts with a bad pun. Yes. So I'm all for that.
Oh, it was great when he told me that. I'm just going like, okay, you need to make this game.
Yeah, it's amazing. Somebody just like, you know, says something one day or posts something on Facebook and you're just like, that's a game title right there.
I don't know what the game is yet, but I have like the shell.
Yeah.
I'm starting.
Yes. I can see the packaging and everything, but right. I don't know the mechanics at all.
Not sure what's in the box, but I can see the cover.
Exactly.
Oh, I knew the box had bear meeples. I was 100% confident about that.
Oh, fantastic. Well, Andrew and Jimmy, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And best of the luck with Claim, the search for the gold nugget.
Yes, on Kickstarter now.
now.
Well, that was Andrew Stangley of Force Perspective Entertainment and Jimmy Snitzline. The publisher and designer, respectively, of Claim, the search for the golden nugget. You've been listening to Your Tables on Fire. You can follow us on Twitter at TableFire. Also, check out our website for show notes and a link to Claim on Kickstarter. That's www.yourtablesonfire.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and BoardGameGeek. Check us out on any of those sites and give us a review. We're hungry for your feedback. Well, until next time, go light it up.